This music doesn't go anywhere, does it? This is Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram.
Never heard Prince before, my guy.
Oh, this is Prince. Well, I gotta wait a long time for it to get into Prince. Oh,
I gotta play the single version then.
He's an impatient man.
Oh yeah.
Now you hear that riff.
I'm hearing the riff now. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram, the Earl Ingram Show. Connor, how do people call into the show?
They call in by calling 844-967-2789.
Okay. And I understand we maybe have a caller.
Yes, we do. Let me...
Right. We get...
Oh, like he went off. He's not here.
We don't have a caller.
Yeah.
We did have a caller.
We did, but I think we probably just...
Oh, he lost patience.
Jumped off the line on us. Like, we had it. Yeah. We had the fish, and then the fish jumped. But
yeah, yeah.
He'll come back.
Yeah. Well, you got CJ on the line.
CJ, okay. Let's talk to CJ. CJ.
Yes, sir.
How are you this morning?
I am good. Thanks for taking my call.
Well,
gentlemen, speaking of election integrity, I would say is an issue. I believe there's one simple question, I think. If people want a free and fair election and they want it honest results, do you believe in voter ID?
Well, voter IDs are just the tip of the iceberg here, aren't they, really? I mean, we aren't talking about the voter ID dispute has been solved in many states by state elections, but we're not talking about simply voter ID issues. Are you a denier? I mean, I was going to ask you, CJ, next time you called in, how do you feel about the last election? Do you think that the last election was legitimate, and do you think that Joe Biden won the last election? And I'm asking this seriously. I'm not baiting you. I'm curious because I do believe that there are people out there who have strong feelings about this.
Yeah, I do too.
So what do you think, CJ? Where do you come down from the standpoint of believing whether or not, regardless of whether you agree with them, do you think Joe Biden won the last election?
I accept the results that are given.
Okay,
the mere fact that January 6th. has become the issue rather than voter integrity. And there's a lot of questions out there. We had
in
Madison.
Okay.
You're aware of that, Sandy?
Yeah, of course. I know that there's an issue. Ballot harvesting,
right?
I'm not sure exactly when people say ballot harvesting, they've used a term that sounds very troublesome, but I'm not sure that ballot harvesting is a lot more than simply running around and suggesting to people that they ought to go vote or that they ought to vote. Right? I mean, we've always had door-to-door solicitations of get out the vote. And we've never called a door-to-door solicitation to get out the vote ballot harvesting. But we've chosen to call it ballot harvesting when people go around and say, send in your vote. Okay? Send in your vote is somehow different than get out the vote. Because I think that's all that ballot harvesting is an organized effort to get people to send in their votes.
Well, that's maybe the way you describe it. I don't describe it that way.
Well, how do you describe it, CJ? Instead of debating it with ambiguities, what are you talking about?
You said that there was a lot of states that have solved the voter ID thing. And absentee ballots. Well, absentee ballots.
Well, no, wait.
You asked a question.
Okay, I'm asking.
This is what I'm saying.
I'm asking the question about harvesting votes. I wanted you to finish.
That's what I'm getting to.
Okay, all right, go ahead.
Because people in the park did not have to show an ID. They were able to fill out a ballot,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't have to identify themselves. People that have absentee ballots have to go to their clerk, show their ID, and they can vote absentee.
That wasn't
required in the park. All they had to do was show up, take a ballot, sign their name, send it in. Well, so that's what I mean by ballot harvesting.
Uh-huh.
Showing an ID to get an absentee ballot, I agree with. I'm going to have to vote absentee this year. But I'm going to go to my clerk. I'm going to show my ID, who I am, request a ballot. They'll mail it to me. I'll fill it out. That's not what's been required. So the mere fact of saying a free, fair election and absentee ballots, you should have to show your ID to get one.
Well, each state decides.
Each
state will decide what has to be shown and how you go about getting your absentee ballots. That's a matter of state law. So you have an idea what it should be, but each state decides what it in fact
and
is.
And that's what you said, the states that have solved that issue, that's usually what they require.
Well,
you to vote absentee and get a mail-in ballot, mm-hmm. you have to prove who you are. That's my problem with free, fair, and elections. This last one, COVID caused all kinds of different issues. They want to continue that. COVID's no longer an issue. We can mask up. We can go safely, do 6 feet separation, all that. But you still should have to prove who you are, Sandy, and that's not what your party wants.
My party wants.
I believe it should be easier to vote and harder to cheat. Your party doesn't. When you hear someone say they don't believe in voter, you should have to identify yourself to get a ballot.
Uh-huh.
That's ballot harvesting, in my opinion.
So you believe that was happening in every state in the last election? Like when you
no,
said
but
the
it
park.
It went on in Madison.
Oh, and
it
you...
went on in Madison, and you did not have to show an ID to prove who you were. You got to fill out a ballot.
Can we document that? That would be a valid concern for sure if you could walk into a park, grab a ballot, and vote. But I'm just curious. You know, is there
what went on?
Well,
continue that here.
Well, CJ. Did it go on? I mean, is this something that Gableman has uncovered? Because it hasn't achieved a noteworthy degree of newsworthiness regarding how widespread it was or whether it could possibly have affected the outcome of the election. And
I'm not saying it did or didn't, Sandy.
Okay, all right. Well, that's
every vote should be legal, Sandy, and there's no way to track those votes.
Well,
there's no way to prove that person. You know, you'd have to go through each one, what address you came from, what's your name.
My understanding in Wisconsin, CJ, is that the absentee ballot has the initials of the city, of the clerk on it, right? And so in order for it to be valid, it has the initials of the clerk who's validating the fact that the person voting has identified themselves. So if that didn't happen, then... that would be the subject of an audit that would be revealed. So, again, your arm waving is typical of what's going on now. To talk about a theoretical, there are theoretical ways that people could vote illegitimately. There always are theoretical ways that votes, you can have boxes of illegitimate votes delivered to, by truck.
Dead people voting.
All these things could happen. Some of them have happened in the past. The question is whether they did happen. And the fact is that 35 courts, I think, have carried out an evaluation of this, have sought evidence to find out whether it happened. And all of this speculation about fraudulent voting, none of it has been proven out. So, again, that strikes me, CJ, as hysterical arm-waving and the effort to breed hysteria without a factual basis. But anyway.
Well, to get an absentee ballot today, you should have to show an ID. And that, they want to allow absentee mail-in ballots. I agree with that. They've made it, you should be able to do that, but you still should have to identify who you are by an ID, your driver's license, or however it's decided.
But just to get back to the initial questions, CJ, and I'm comforted, but you aren't a denier of the legitimacy of the last election, and you don't think that a lot of people voted who shouldn't have voted legitimately in the last election. Is that right? Or you do think that there were a bunch of illegitimate votes cast, but you're accepting the outcome? I mean, where do you stand on the last election?
I think one illegal vote is too many, but I do accept the outcome because it's hard to prove. Just like you know, you said for a clerk to go through every one of these votes and identify the ones that came from the park, it's darn near impossible.
No. What happens is the absentee ballot to be valid has to have the initial of a clerk on it, and so if they didn't, then the absentee ballot wouldn't have been valid under an audit, and it would have been uncovered in the audit, and it would have been ruled invalid. So, you know, all you're talking about is the enforcement of the legitimate voting process, and we got it. Thanks a lot for calling in, CJ.
Thank you, Sandy. Yep. Thank you, Justin.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Bye.
All right.
Well, so, you know, it's kind of like having your cake and eating it, too. I'll accept the outcome, but I think a lot of illegitimate people voted. I think that's kind of where CJ comes down. And I think that's the problem with society right now is we might have people willing to concede, well, it was okay last time. But all I can tell you is too many of those people voted, and it's very troublesome. Yeah.
Yep, it's a convoluted mess is what that whole I don't want to be perceived as being condescending now that we've disconnected. I mean, at the end of the day, again, you go back to these arguments where there's only one right answer to: do you care about the integrity of elections? Well, of course we all do. Everyone does. That it's not mutually exclusive to then what that looks like, and to claim that, you know, he believes in a more secure election, but one that's easier to vote in. They didn't do that.
Well, no, actually, what he described is the law in Wisconsin, and it has been audited, and it was carried out in the last election. Well,
in a bunch of states, didn't we all declare this was one of the most secure elections ever documented?
Yeah. So I think we have a break. Is that right, Connor?
Yep, and we also have a caller, Jack from Miramac. We can get to him after the break, though.
All right, good. Okay. Hang on, Jack. Good morning, Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram, the Earl Ingram Show. Connor, how do people call into this show?
They call in by calling 844-967-2789.
I'm here this morning with Scott Williams, a guest.
Here I am.
Yeah, and we have a caller. I think you said you're Jack from Merrimack.
Mm-hmm.
Jack, are you on?
I'm on.
Morning, Jack.
And thanks for taking my call. Good morning.
Sure.
You know, these election deniers, just every once in a while they get to me. I think this morning was one of those once in a whiles. First, you can't get a ballot in Wisconsin without appropriate ID, period, end of story. There was no one just handing out ballots in any park without any ID.
What? Yeah. Yeah, we didn't get a name park on that one.
Yeah, it's
the park.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been an election observer for the League of Women Voters in Wisconsin. I've seen the process. Anybody that hands out ballots, whoever's in charge of that particular election area gives them this lecture beforehand, and they tell them what's accepted, what's acceptable, how to go through the process. But that's it just the irony of this whole situation is totally lost on these people that are election deniers. They don't seem to realize, first of all, very peculiar thing, any place where their candidate loses, there had to be fraud. But people on the same ballot in the same place, no, they're fine if the election deniers wanted those people to win. Those people legitimately won, but they're all on the same ballot. It's amazing to me that people think like that.
And that slices along demographic lines that can be advantageous. You know, that the othering happens within that process.
Well, I think that you're right, Jack.
I agree with you.
Yeah, the problem is those people, too many of those people voted, meaning those people are the ones who vote for the people on the ballot that you didn't want to win.
And in our state, that often divides us along a racial demographic, and especially in the cities as well.
Yeah.
Well, it divides along generally a two-county demographic, Dane County and Milwaukee County.
Right.
Funny thing, those are the only two places where recounts were demanded. And, again, it's the same process. Our candidate lost. Oh, it's got to be something wrong with the election, but the whole rest of the state, that was just fine. It just, the complete irony and actually, I would say, intentional, willful denial of that juxtaposition, that craziness, just, it gets to me, that's all.
Well, I don't understand how we can be asking these questions. We have an ex-justice of the state Supreme Court, Justice Gableman, who's carrying out a year-long investigation. There must be fire where there's all this smoke, right, Jack? I mean, what is going on? Why does the legislature, why are we willing to spend $1 million on a pursuit of something which is so obviously politically fraught and has no factual basis whatsoever? It to me is there's something going on. I mean, it's a national. The whole reason Gableman exists is because the Trump movement wants to be sure that as many states as possible can announce that they have investigations ongoing into the fraudulent stolen election. I think, isn't it? Don't you see it that way, Jack?
Well, and that's a part of it. Another part of it is, we got to do something about these terrible voter fraud. So we're going to ban, and they call them drop boxes. They are authorized ballot collection boxes. They're like a mailbox. They're hard to get into, even harder than a mailbox, actually. They are authorized by the appropriate town or city or clerk. And they're legitimate places to leave your ballot, which is sealed. Then the clerk gets the sealed ballot, notes that it is sealed, makes sure that there are the appropriate signatures on it, et cetera, and then counts the ballot.
Yeah.
There's nothing unlawful about that. And in fact, the Supreme Court of Wisconsin, in their wonderful intelligence, have seen fit to reverse a decision of the Wisconsin Elections Board or the Elections Commission that allowed for those drop boxes, as they call them. You have the court now is legislating. This is how this should be done, not the legislature, which authorized the Wisconsin Election Commission.
Well, I think the question was that the Supreme Court was addressing was the process that was used by the Election Commission to adopt the drop box process, I would have disagreed with them on the administrative law issue of whether, in fact, it was lawfully done or not by the Election Commission. But the one thing that the court did do was said that the elections that had occurred under the rules that had been implemented by the Election Commission were valid. So in spite of the fact that Trump wanted to point at that Supreme Court decision and say, see, further evidence that my election was stolen, was exactly the opposite. And even our conservative Supreme Court at least was careful with respect to that aspect of it.
Yeah, that's true. The whole purpose of this thing, in my opinion, is to disrupt our election process as much as possible, to put on additional rules and limitations on how to vote and make it much more difficult as possible, and not just one demographic. That's the thing that's really ironic here, too. It affects Republicans as well as Democrats. You make it more difficult for anybody to vote, and it's more difficult for everybody to vote.
Well, interestingly, the process that resulted in the easing of the and making it more easy to vote by mail was started by the Republican Party, because they I guess erroneously initially conceived that write-in ballots were more frequently carried out by Republicans, and then when it turned out that wasn't true, that suddenly became a very nefarious scheme.
The question in my mind is this: should every citizen have the right to vote? And should it be as easy as possible for that person to vote? And my answer to that is yes, and there really should be a federal law that says something like that.
Yeah,
every citizen's got the right to vote, and anything that really interferes with it, seriously interferes. Gerrymandering extreme is one thing, and multiple voter ID laws.
Jack, we're going. I've got to cut you off. You're doing some good stuff. We're going to break. We'll be back.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Jack. Good morning. Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram, the Earl Ingram Show. Earl's not going to be here today and tomorrow. He's busily at work with doing his good work with young folks in City of Milwaukee. This voice of the elders, we've talked about it. Now he's doing it. Connor, how do people call into the show?
Call 844-967-2789.
Sitting here today with Scott Williams. Our last names are not coincidental.
It's the truth.
Yeah.
So I was saying about monkeypox. We just on the break there, we heard some informational thing about monkeypox, and my suggestion was, maybe we need to be taking this thing more seriously and being more well informed. We're still in the middle of trying to manage COVID, not that well, but we could start by maybe not calling it monkeypox.
I think, because it probably turns it into something sort of...
It's far away because it's where there's monkeys. And in Milwaukee, only at the zoo.
Yeah, but, anyway, so it's clear that it is a developing problem.
Yes.
One to be taken seriously, and monkeypox sort of sounds like it invites a joke, right?
So, yeah.
This last half hour, a couple of things ongoing. One of them is the economy, which... we talk about every day, and it's sort of a surprising, I think some of what I've talked about is being demonstrated like today. You drive, you turn on the radio, you find out the stock market went up a whole bunch yesterday. And why did the stock market go up a whole bunch yesterday when everyone is wringing their hands about the recession that's just commencing? And what it really shows is that all this wealth, everything that Donald Trump would point at during his 4 years about how great the economy was, and he would point at the stock market and say, see how great the economy is? The stock market is disconnected from the economy that affects Tom, Dick, and Mary, and that affects how much we pay for gas at the gas pump, that affects how much we pay for groceries at the grocery store, that affects how much our income goes up or down inflation or salary increases that might match inflation. It's just disconnected. And so what we should really be talking about is things that affect our real everyday life. And inflation is obviously one of them, and also job income. And one of the things that's troublesome about the current fight against inflation is this fear that wages are going to increase so rapidly that it's going to drive inflation. Well, wouldn't that be awful if wages for Tom, Dick, and Mary increased rapidly? Because we've gone 50 years with wages lagging far behind the rate of inflation. And for instance, the minimum wage is way behind and has never been inflation adjusted, and wages themselves have failed to keep up adequately, particularly the median income in the United States and the kind of income that's realized, the real income that's realized that's expendable after you take into account things like healthcare costs. The disposable income of American families, based on their capacity to pay for health care, child daycare, to take care of college costs, all of those things have become substantially more difficult and almost impossible to achieve for the median American family or anyone who's below the median American family income.
Well, Tom, Dick, and Mary often probably have a stock portfolio.
They don't.
So it's not a conversation about their economy.
Absolutely. It's something that's irrelevant to them. A home would be the most relevant way that they could expect to accumulate wealth during their life. That's always been the American dream. The American dream has not always been premised on a stock portfolio. However, it's getting more difficult to buy an American home for an American family for the reason of student debt, for the reason of the cost of health care. It's just almost impossible for American families to not live paycheck to paycheck. And if you're living paycheck to paycheck, you're just not accumulating the money to buy a home. I mean, I'm sure that's being experienced by people of your age, Scott, and younger, in terms of the inability to get ahead of the game financially.
And rather than talk about that, it's much easier to have red meat issues that you throw out and create a culture war rather than actually talking about these things. Then, you know, what policies are you going to try to create that would actually empower? And this goes for both parties, right?
Yeah,
how are we going to empower the middle class and the lower middling classes? How are we going to directly support them?
How could we possibly not have child daycare provided by the government? Because the median family that we've talked about has a $75,000 income with both adults working in a predominant number of those median families. So that means that half of the families in America earn $75,000 or less combined income. They have 2.5 children, and they can't afford to buy health care, $16,000 a year. Child daycare would be $16,000 a year. Their rent's going to be $25,000 minimum. And they've spent all of their disposable money. They haven't bought groceries. They haven't bought clothes. They haven't paid for anything. They haven't bought a car. So the fact is that they don't buy health insurance in all likelihood. That's the most discretionary of those expenditures. And it has been discretionary ever since it was no longer mandatory after the court case following the Affordable Care Act, which has essentially, because it isn't mandatory, it's destroyed the affordability of health care insurance, made it more expensive. And they're in a terrible box. Why would not the employers in America be pressing hard to have daycare so they could liberate into the workforce all these workers that we currently can't find because we're scarce workers, which is causing shortages in this country? I mean, what's going on? Why is it that we won't address these issues? And why is it that it's the conservative impulse, the Republican impulse, is to ignore things that would make it better for the American working family to be available to work? What do you think causes it?
I think that, you know, we've already talked about, like, the politician's job is to stay in power, right? Mm-hmm. Is to be reelected.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that ultimately, you know, it's when you want to trigger the electorate and get them to turn out and vote, the way that the way that the right is doing it right now is much easier than trying to organize and rally around, you know, specific policies. And I think for the left, you had people who tried, like Warren and Buttigieg, they tried to rally a movement around more intellectual, like, policies, actual policies, stating them.
Yeah.
And the party rejected, you know, that's not what the party thought we needed. And so I think it is entirely about votes and elections and getting reelected. And I think that it stems from, like, what do we expect politicians to talk to us about as far as our economic realities go, personally?
Well, and in fact, I think one of the reasons why government is held in such a low esteem generally by liberals because it's not delivering what they want, by conservatives because as far as they're concerned, government is an intrusion into their lives and they don't want it to exist at all. So we have, and I think the real problem is that government isn't delivering anything of value that can be identified very easily. So if it were delivering child daycare, the one thing of value that it does deliver clearly to a lot of people is Medicare. Mm-hmm. And we don't hear any argument about Medicare. And in fact, there's a political third rail in politics. Whether you're a conservative or a liberal, you never talk about eliminating Medicare because there's a lot of people who realize the benefit of this service, and it's being provided by the government in a way that makes it very available. Medicare makes medical service very available to a whole raft of people who seriously need medical service. So if we had child daycare, there'd be a whole raft of people who would be realizing the benefit of child daycare. And that would be a government benefit that would be realized. If we had education that was available on a broad and cheap basis all the way up through college and graduate school, we'd have a service that was identified and clearly very valuable to the people. We had medical service up and down the Medicare for all, we'd have the same thing. That's what they have in Europe, and that's why I think there's a greater source of sense of legitimacy of government there.
Well, I mean, I've worked with more than one teacher where the decision to continue teaching or not was entirely predicated on the decision around the cost of childcare. So, meaning if I'm going to continue teaching at the salary that I'm receiving and I have to pay for childcare for three children, I'm actually just basically working to pay for my transportation, my car, and the child care.
So part of the shortage of workers out there in the marketplace, I think, is clearly because we don't provide child daycare. Mm-hmm. And we've got lots of potential workers sitting on the sidelines because they have to be home. I think we've got a... Do we have a caller? No.
Oh, we're going to break in a minute.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so, you know, I think that this shortage needs to be solved, and one of the ways that... And no, is never talked about for solving it is actually having a broad program of child daycare. We're going to break. We'll be back. Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram, the Earl Ingram Show. This is Thursday, and I've got Scott Williams here as a guest. Connor, how could someone call in these last 10 minutes, 12
probably
minutes?
Call 844-967-2789.
All right. Well, I just noticed it came over my Apple phone, my Apple Watch alerted me to the fact that Brittany Griner was sentenced to 9 years today by a Russian court with respect to the drug charge she had against her. And it's interesting to me the amount of attention we've paid to that. And the innuendo behind it all is how unreasonable it is that this American personality would be arrested in Russia on a drug charge and then tried in court about it. And we're asserting that it's all a part of the conflict between Russia and the United States that's arisen out of the Ukraine issue. But what would we have done in the United States if an American or a French person, we've in fact had, there have been issues associated with athletes in the United States. She was carrying apparently hashish oil. She claimed it was for health purposes. I suspect it kept her psyche healthy, at least. But, you know, the fact is that she's being held accountable for a law there that she violated. And how discriminatory is it that she was searched for it? I don't know. But this is all a part of an American process we have for vilifying various countries. We have the same kind of attention paid to any legal actions that occur in China that relate to American citizens. What worries me is this fact that we do this. You know, that we tend to paint various countries with a black brush, and to vilify them. And the media does it because it's good media. You know, we're all reading about Brittany Griner. We all care about it for some reason, but we don't really think through exactly what's going on. And we tend to vilify Russia as being a country that's heinous enough to arrest this Brittany Griner and now try her in court, when in fact in the United States we have more people incarcerated than any other country in the world by orders of magnitude. We have people incarcerated for drug crimes in numbers that are far greater than any other country by orders of magnitude.
I think the rational side of the concern is probably the conditions in which she would be incarcerated, and is she, are they going to somehow try to make an example of her based on a bias that exists? I agree, though, 100%. I mean, we have politicians like Trump running on the idea that we're letting murderous drug-dealing thugs into our country, and that's, you know, the risk we're running them. So when, in fact, someone does have drugs and admit that it was their drugs and they knowingly went into a country with much stricter rules and laws surrounding that, you know, you take on that. Now, the defense is that she claims she didn't know that she brought them, but that's not a defense for drunk driving either.
Right. And
I didn't know I was drunk.
Yeah. Connor?
No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I kind of think it's incredibly, incredibly doesn't make any sense from my perspective. I mean, I understand, like, Russia has their separate laws and such, and it is hypocritical for us to criticize them when we do have such lots of people in jail for petty drug crimes. But I think at the same time, it's more about their legal process than anything.
And
the sentencing too. I mean, 9.5 years. I mean, even in America, you wouldn't get something like that.
No. I mean, obviously,
100%. I agree with that.
No, there's no question. But you know, our legal process would be subject to just as much question when you look at the data, right? Who is it that gets convicted of what crimes, and what does the demographic look like? And if you simply look at the data, it begins to look a lot like we have lots of political criminals in jail, right? I mean, we've got lots of people who are in jail, and demographically, when you analyze it, you have to scratch your head and say.
And we put people to death, and some countries object to that. You know, they'll keep known murderers in their country.
Well, we're one of a handful of countries that have the death penalty still intact. So, you know, our political process and our judicial process is not beyond question. My only point is that we tend to vilify just a couple of countries, and as soon as we vilify them, they become our enemy, and we become their enemy. And that enemy status has everything to do probably with the sentence Brittany Griner just got. We have painted Russia as our enemy. We have therefore become their enemy. Their conduct is related to what they believe to be their enemy status with us. When we want to put a NATO base or talk about putting establishing a NATO alliance with Ukraine and putting a NATO base in Ukraine, that looks to Russia like a very aggressive action. If in fact we are their enemy and they are our enemy, and we had begun to paint them into the corner as our enemy beginning in about 2008 or 2010, and at that point it was really in my mind the result of a Russophobia, this knee-jerk fear of Russia that we had generated during the Cold War, mm-hmm. when in fact the reason for the Cold War was communism.
Yeah. We got a caller, by the way.
Okay, who's
Bob
the caller?
Bob from Wisconsin, East Coast.
Okay, Bob. Yeah. Bob, what do you have to say?
Well, good morning, Sandy and your son and Scott. And Connor, what I have to say is that Brittany Griner was not traveling as she was traveling as an individual. She was also traveling as somebody who was a member of an athletic group in Russia. And I'm surprised that she wasn't better represented by them, anticipating the problems she'd have with anything she'd have with her. I'm surprised that they didn't have her travel agent go through her We're looking at her luggage.
Yeah.
And make sure everything cleared.
Yeah, Bob. The team she was playing for, though, was a Russian team. She was playing for a Russian professional basketball team. So she would be subject, I suppose, to the same restrictions and laws as the rest of that Russian basketball team, which I presume was comprised of not only Americans and other non-Russians, but Russians as well. So I'm not sure whether her status as a team member should provide some level of favoritism associated with...
No, I'm not asking for favoritism.
Uh-huh.
What I'm asking for is for them to take her under their wing,
uh-huh,
and make sure that everything went smoothly.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's like it's oversight. Like if you're playing for this Russian team and they're knowledgeable of exactly what the laws are, they should communicate.
Oh, I see. So it's the Russian team though that should have been exercising the Russian government.
And if the assumption here that we're all making is that it actually was a mistake. I'm not suggesting that she's lying about that, but if she was actually trying to bring it with her and she knew that she shouldn't, then she wouldn't tell them about that or let them see it.
Yeah. But if it was a prescription for pain, then it wasn't.
Correct.
In the United States, I hear you on that.
Yeah, yeah.
That complicates for sure.
Well, I guess my point is...
Thanks
for the call. My point is more general, though, and just it's this question of how do we decide who our enemies are, and then what is the result of that decision? And as I've said before, that decision about who are our enemies tends to be made by wizards, and then we get presented with the definition of our enemies. And incidentally, whoever we define as our enemy is ipso facto then our enemy, because they have to resolve that if they are our enemy, we are their enemy, and all of our action would be viewed differently in that context. And that's, in my book, one of the problems associated with how the Ukraine current situation in Ukraine has generated over the last 14 years. And it's my terrible concern about what's now happening in China, because we have increasingly declared China to be our enemy, which of course increasingly makes us China's enemy, which increasingly dictates the kind of conduct we carry out with China and they carry out with us.
And it also completely ignores our economic codependency on one another the way that we are inextricably intertwined.
Yes, so that, I mean, with China, we're really playing with fire. And I know that was what Xi Jinping said about when you play with fire, you get burned. But we are playing with fire when we're playing with China. And the declaration, our declaration of the, and the our conduct with respect to them, vilifying them as our enemy, is going to create a very difficult problem. And Nancy Pelosi's trip there was a further declaration of that. And if you look at the sequence of events that have happened since 1979, when we signed a treaty with them, creating the One China policy and basically making Taiwan a formal part of China without directly declaring it, we have since then reneged on successive bases from that treaty, stepped back from it. And as we step back from it, it's always been because we think China maybe is our enemy, which is making us their enemy. I think we're closing in on the end of today.
Yep. No, 1 minute left.
Just focus on the Bears. You know, like, keep the Bears as our enemy.
The Bears.
The Bears.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dick is driving.
The unfortunate admission, I am a Bears fan.
Oh, no, Connor. Well, that, there goes the neighborhood.
That confirms it, Connor.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a suspicion.
Yeah.
It was just a twitchy feeling I had when you came in the room.
Suspiciously quiet when you guys were talking about the Packers.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Bears... you know, if they're one of my favorite teams, but...
Because they don't have the quarterback, you know?
Yeah, that's right. When they get the quarterback...
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe there'll be a bigger problem.
They don't have
problem.
The good team.
Yeah.
They don't have the winning team yet.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we'll sign off.
Thanks for having me on. Thanks for dealing with me, everyone.
Yeah. Connor,
thank you.
Have a good day. See you tomorrow.